Welcome, everybody, to the PlayStation 5 Central Podcast. I'm your host, Dan the Man. I'm joined by the employee of Dan and the Gaming's YouTube channel, Vicar.
Manager. HR department. Manager of the YouTube channel.
He's in charge of running all the podcasts.
I am doing well.
Doing well. And, of course, the gallivanting trophy connoisseur, Jordan. How are you,
mate? Back from my recent gallivantizations.
And the reason why I change the intro every time, guys, is because most podcasts will just do the same intro every time and it gets stale. So here at the PS5 Central Podcast, we like to mix things up.
Don't we look like bread? We're not day old bread, man. We're not stale.
We're not Sony first party studio games. We're not all just third person action adventure, mate.
We're swinging hard. Now, what are the top games? What are our top five games going on? Yes, so today, as you know by the title, our best games of 2022. We're a bit late compared to some other people, but that's fine because ours is the definitive list.
It is.
Across all media and the world. Would you say that's right, God?
We're the reason Machinima shut down. Our lists are just that good.
Hold on, what? What are you talking about?
I just had a random thought about Machinima. What a YouTube channel that was.
I'm the reason Ryan Higa is gone.
What happened to him? Where did he go?
I'm the reason.
They're like, is he in not doing anything anymore?
No.
Who's
this? Ryan Higa.
Ryan Higa.
Previously Niga Higa.
I don't remember that first name. I remember his YouTube name, but yeah, I don't remember his first name.
So before we get into the top five, guys, do you want to talk about your honorable mentions?
Yes.
Yeah, we can. Yep.
Do you have any?
So yeah, we know our top five. So we gave Dan our respective top fives. And each game was awarded points based on its position. So if it was position number one, it got 5 points. If it was number two, four. If it was number three, it got three points. So on and so forth. So the game with the most points was, well, then we ranked them in order of how many points they got overall. And that was how we came up with our definitive top five. One thing that Dan and I did not include, because Vike, I don't think you played this, but Dan and I did, I'm pretty sure, is that we didn't include The Last of Us Remastered or Remake or whatever it was called that came out on the PlayStation 5 this year. The main reason I didn't include it is because I thought because it's just a remake, I won't put it on there. If I didn't have that rule, it would definitely be on there. I don't know whereabouts it would be. Yeah, it would definitely be on there. It's a fantastic game. It's one of the best remakes I've ever played. It makes the game so much more enjoyable and it doesn't change too much, but it just fixes some things that needed some fixing, whether that was stability, just mechanic tuning, making it a little bit more accessible. Not that it was completely inaccessible on the PS3, but just made it a little bit more
refined.
Just refinement. Modernized. Yeah, just refinement.
But
yeah,
it didn't modernized. Make our list because it skews more remaster than remake for me anyway.
Yeah.
So I thought we can't really put a remaster on the list.
Yeah.
And but we will be talking about that show as well in an upcoming episode as well. Whoever's been watching The Last of Us show.
Spoilers, it's really good.
Cannot wait to talk
about
that. It's really good.
Another one that we want to mention is Metal Hellsinger. I played it. Didn't quite make the top of our lists, but it was really, really great game. It was by an indie studio that really, this is their first sort of title. They've had a lot of, not heartbreak, but it took them ages to get things off the ground. They'd be working on other games and it fell through. They had cancellations. They finally got this out. A lot of passion. Shooter mixed with rhythm. So rhythm shooter in hell. Troy Baker, Jennifer Hale lend their voices to it. So, and it was just very underrated. Really great music. any other year might have won best music for all these awards, but it came up against some very stiff competition just in general in the action category and things of that nature. So definitely recommend playing that one. I got the platinum day one. It's an easy plat too.
Oh, wow. That's day all. One.
Yeah. Well, I'd already platinumed it on PC.
Yeah.
Because I had a review code. And then so I knew exactly what to do. But it is very simple plat for any of you trophy hunters out there. Mm-hmm. But you do need the rhythm. You know, you need to be able to shoot with a rhythm. And I guess you need to probably like metal music. If you don't like, you know, rock metal music, probably might not be the game for you.
Yeah.
But yeah. So Metal Hellsinger is another one that definitely recommend. Gran Turismo 7. In terms of racing, premium racing titles for the PlayStation 5, this has to be probably the top billing. I know they had some controversy with some of the microtransactions.
And a lot of monetization controversy.
The actual gameplay is pretty great. And so I played a decent amount
of GT7, and the driving is, yeah, really good. Like, especially I play it with steering wheel because my friend has it on his steering wheel with GT7. It's really well.
Oh, this was the first racing game I didn't play in control at all. I played the whole game on wheel.
Mm. So you almost have to.
Maybe that enhanced the experience for me because I'd never done that before. Even with the F1 games, I typically will bounce between controller and wheel. But for this one, I just exclusively did wheel. But I do have to go back and get all the gold medals. What are they? Gold license plates. That's always fun. That just reminds me of the good old days, PS1, PS2, the gold licenses, classic.
Are you excited for the Gran Turismo movie, Dan?
Hey, it looked all right, actually.
It didn't look horrible, did it?
Yeah, I love it. It was that nostalgic noise of the starting when it's like, oh, man, that was so nostalgic. Yeah.
It's got, I think it's Orlando Bloom.
Really?
He's in the movie as like the manager sort of role. But yeah, I don't know. Hopefully it's nothing like the Need for Speed movie because that was not
that great. Was abysmal.
With Aaron, what was it?
Aaron Paul.
Aaron Paul, it was
shocking, that movie.
Yeah, it wasn't good, was it? I'm trying to think of other racing sort of. There's not many like purely racing films.
So Furby Fully Loaded, mate. Lindsay Lohan.
I don't even consider Fast and the Furious a racing film anymore.
No.
Hey, we could have a long discussion about how downhill Fast and Furious has gone.
Oh, you know, really good movie.
Has it gone downhill or has it just gotten better? Because I think it's gotten better.
I agree with you, George, except Fast 9 was utter
trash.
Abysmal.
It was trash. It was
Fast 9?
Yeah, I thought it was fun.
Ah, oh, so bad.
Ford versus Ferrari. A really great sports racing movie. Really great. Yeah, James Mangold, who did Logan as well, the director. Okay, so any other honorable mentions, guys?
One that I played that I don't know if many other people played at all. I don't even think you two played it. Was Rollerdrome, which was one that came out around the middle of the year. Mm. It was so much fun. Yeah. Such a cool little like Tony Hawk / like shooter arcade game that was just such a breeze. It sounds really complicated because you're doing like tricks on rollerblades in a Tony Hawk style like playground while trying to take down enemies and dodge their bullets and their missiles and stuff. But it's so simple. It's so fun. It makes it so easy to feel like you're a pro. And you start off and you're like, oh, God, okay, got to be able to time my flips, got to try and get my grinds right. And then by the time you get to the end of the game, you're like doing flips while shooting at enemies and then dodging their bullets on the same jump. Like, it's so much fun. It's not much more than that. Like, it's just a fun time, like a fun.
It's not a long game either.
And it's not long, no. And it has a really good trophy list too. So, yeah, that one's a lot of fun. Not enough to make it onto my top five, but definitely an honorable mention.
Does it have some of that Rocket League magic? Low floor, high ceiling type.
A little bit. The ceiling's not quite as high as Rocket League because like between the entry point and where you can go with Rocket League is so high.
Yeah.
It's not quite the same as that because it is still like it's not physics based like Rocket League is. Whereas like is Rocket League so like it's so just all over the place. But still, yeah, still really, really good time.
And can I, another honorable mention, now this came out, didn't come out in 2022, so it's cheating. But they're actually redoing, so you know Hitman 3, right? They're actually putting together Hitman 1, 2,
World
and 3.
World of Assassination.
They're putting them all into one called the World of Assassination. This game, it's going to be epic because you got all the locations in one thing, one price point. I think it's perfect the way they're doing that. But anyway, I've been playing through that again, and it is such a good game. I would actually give it a 10 out of 10, I think.
It's the funny thing is, at the start of the year, I know we're only including games that came out this year, but if we're talking about games I played this year, I actually played for the first time at the start of the year Hitman 2. And yeah, because I played Hitman 1 and Hitman 3, but I never... So, actually, I think I played both Hitman 2 and 3 this year. But yeah, Hitman 2,
so
man.
So did you do like the F1 map and...
Yeah.
And that Mumbai? Good. Mumbai?
Yeah, Mumbai. Yeah, yep. That was a good one.
The
that
castle,
surprisingly tricky. Okay, I'm gonna that castle mission is probably, was that Hitman 2, Dan, or Hitman 3? That was Hitman 3.
Two.
The Sherlock Holmes one.
No, I'm thinking of the Scottish castle.
I'm trying to remember
that one's three. So the Knives Out one is Hitman 3. That's an amazing level.
Can I say that is probably one of the best levels ever?
Yeah, it is.
It's just so memorable, man. Like, it is so good.
It's very good.
I just want more of that. And I know IO know that about that level. So I hope we see more. Could it branch off? Could they branch off into doing more murder mystery? Who knows? But yeah. If anyone has ever, real fans of Metal Gear Solid know the VR mission expansions where there was a mystery levels and they were a hell of a lot of fun. So
did you do the New York level, the banking New York level?
Yeah, I did all of it.
Okay, so you did them all. Cool.
Yeah, I did all of them. Yeah. I will say the story's not the most memorable story, but yeah,
but it's
not about the story.
It's not about the story.
It's about the sandbox.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that to be a cop out either.
No, I'm not saying it either.
Because it is it is the biggest weakness of the game.
It
100%.
Is.
100%. Yeah. But when everything else is that damn fun, you sort of let it slide a little bit.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway.
Oh, I do remember the castle. That's where they had that big ceremony, the fire.
Yes,
yeah. That was really good.
And it's actually quite accessible game too, because you can just follow the missions. You don't even have to be good at stealth or anything. Like, it can be a very easy game if you want it to be.
Something just so fun about walking through that world, looking, discovering little things here and there.
Yeah. Yeah, so I thought I'd mention that one. And anything else, guys, before we get into top five?
TMNT.
Yeah, I probably got two. TMNT was so much fun. It probably doesn't belong on a top five because...
Who gives a fuck? Come on.
Maybe it does. I don't know. It was just another one for me where it was just so much fun, where it's basically just the arcade game that you remember from being like bowling alleys and that sort of thing, where you play as the four turtles and you just got like side-scrolling going through and it's a beat 'em up, and it's so much fun. It looks great. The graphics on it are amazing. The art style is so... Like, it's not revolutionary art style, but it is going for a specific aesthetic and it nails it. And like the different bosses in each level, the replayability, the extra characters they add in, the fact that it's eight player co-op? I can't remember if you can play with
eight. It's at least four. It's at least four.
It's definitely four, but I can't remember if you can play as the eight characters all at once. But yeah, an absolutely amazing game.
Six players.
Okay, so six. I think they've gone back and added in another character. But I might be wrong there.
Six-player co-op. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, so like things can get so intense, but like the frame rate never stutters. It's completely fine, handles it all well. The other one I was going to mention was The Quarry, which was a really interesting... that was this year, wasn't it? Yeah, that was this year.
Yeah.
Really interesting game from
Supermassive.
You know, I get Supermassive confused with the team that does The Division. Who's the team that does The Division?
Supermassive.
Is that just Massive?
Yeah, Massive.
Yeah, I get them.
They're not Super.
No.
But isn't Red Storm doing the new one? Is that right?
New Division.
Yeah. Because I know
Massive are doing the Star Wars one.
Massive Entertainment, they're called.
Yeah. But yeah, anyways, The Quarry, really fun.
Good characters.
Great characters, a really great story with a bit of mystery, not quite as scary as Until Dawn, which I sort of enjoyed a little bit more. But like the characters are, there's really good characters in that game and they're acted so perfectly. Just, yeah. So shout out to The Quarry for being really good at what it was aiming to do.
Yeah, fantastic sort of game to play over a weekend as well.
Yeah.
Especially around Halloween season or with a couple of friends. And they've even got a mode where you just press play and you watch it as a movie.
Yeah, that could be fun.
I mean, if you want to do that, that's an option. So, yeah. Okay, top five of 2022. Coming in at number five is Cult of the Lamb.
Woo! Clap, clap.
Aussie, Aussie, Aussie.
Yeah.
Oi, oi, oi.
So I didn't realize that, and I played the game, and I'm like, what? It's got the Victorian, like...
Yeah, like arts
symbol on there. Yeah, the Vic art symbol. I'm like, what? Yeah, so a little homegrown gem, this one.
Yeah, Victoria, isn't it? They're from Melbourne. Yep. Wow. Yeah, so a pretty big success, this game. I think it did 1 million copies in its first week or something for a nice, the Lindy Studio from Australia. That's amazing.
Yeah.
A lot of people's game of the year, you know, it's a dark sort of bizarre roguelike base builder. What would you call it, Jordan? It's a bit
it's like
of everything.
It's like black humor. Like that's sort of what it is. It's sort of like
dark humor. Yeah,
it's dark like a comedy. Game that's like steeped in dark humor, because obviously you're a lamb, and it's Cult of the Lamb, and it's to do with like
a cult,
hell, and like running a cult. Yeah, so it just commits to its aesthetic. So it commits to you are running a cult. You need to have, you know, your law, your book of disciplines. So, like, these are the things that you'll follow in your cult. There's the rituals you can perform every day, because there's a day-night cycle. Every day you can perform a sermon, which will raise the loyalty of your cult members, your followers.
I call them minions.
Yeah, like
my minions.
You need to make sure they're fed. You can name them. You can choose what they look like. You need to give them jobs. So... It was such a delight and such a shock that in a game that is made by such a small team can be so creative and have such a defined identity that they knocked out of the park.
Yeah, really amazing art style that gets you in as well.
Yeah, incredible art style. Heaps of content. I platinumed it. I platinumed it like earlier this morning at like 2 o'clock. And I think I got about 20 hours of gameplay, which is a pretty good knock. That's very doing nice. Absolutely everything. There are a few things like I didn't love with it. Like I wish the combat was a little bit more refined.
And how'd you find the boss fights?
The boss fights were fine. The last boss fight was like, okay, we're stretching a little bit here. Like, where's this difficulty spike come from?
Yeah, I don't know. It was just fun.
Yeah, I wouldn't take points off it for that, because like it is still just a lot of fun. I was hoping for a little bit more complexity with the combat and maybe just an extra layer of things that you can get your cult to do while you're out.
Yes, definitely.
It got to the point towards the end where I was like, I don't need any more wood. I don't need any stone. Yeah. Like, I'm all good. So
maybe they're going to do more with it.
They are. There's more content coming. Yeah.
So that's okay. So that's probably why then. I wonder. Yeah, I'm wondering if they're going to do a Cult of the Lamb 2, because I'd probably prefer a sequel rather than continuing on.
Absolutely, I would love more.
Because there's a lot you could do with that gameplay, and just the base and everything. Like,
especially the way it ends. Like,
yeah,
it's not just you running this. It's not like Animal Crossing where there's no story happening. Like, there is a story and there is progression you are making as you go through. And then the way that it ends sort of opens it to a point where there are avenues that could explore for a sequel. But yeah, just so much fun. Just another game that's like sort of mindless. You don't really need to be paying too much attention. But yeah, just maybe a few extra layers of complexity to sort of sharpen it a little bit, and it could have made this game rate even higher.
Can you imagine? Can you believe someone gave it a 4 out of 10? Some review outlet. So funny. Anyway, that is number five. Number four, Vike, who is it? What is it?
Number four is Sifu.
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 Name the main character's name. Go. Sifu.
Sifu.
The main character even have a name?
Yeah. Do you know it? Come on. You know
I
it.
Don't.
Yang. No.
Do you know what's so funny? My mind went to say Yang, but I'm like, am I just being like, am I just going with a stereotypical Japanese name?
Being racist.
Nah, yeah, I honestly thought that, and I was like, oh, I won't say it because I don't want to be sound like it. I'm like, yeah, all right, so Yang, yeah.
It is Yang, yeah.
Yeah, Yang. Oh, what a game. Out of, like, we were hyped about it by the trailers. They did a great job marketing it. They put it on every PlayStation event possible. They really got the backing, but it actually delivered on what it promised. Now, Jesus was hard for a lot of people. I mean, some of my videos have a million views because it was that hard to beat some of these fights for people.
Especially but
once you get into that rhythm on your second and third playthrough, you really find your groove and you really find it fun. Well, I did anyway. What did you guys think of Sifu?
Yeah, I agree with you, Dan. It's that rhythm. It's that once you get used to it, I truly loved that game. The combat was so much fun, and I just felt like I was good at Kung Fu. Like I've always wondered how games can do like heavy martial arts, like a Jackie Chan, Bruce Lee type, where it's a really intense close quarters martial arts. And I'm like, I don't know, like how can they do it games with just a square and a triangle button? But Sifu did it, and they did it really well. I think the upgrades are great. I think that sort of roguelite system was really good. As you get older, you get stronger, but you have less health. But I really loved it. It was so much fun. Yeah, I mean, it's not like the game didn't have its faults, but I definitely think for what it was, those five levels, they even had that sort of sandbox style element where you'd have to go, or even that sort of roguelite element where you'd have to go back when you unlock new things, sort of like, you know, it's funny because
shortcuts and
new doors, new things to find, special bosses and people to fight in secret areas. I sort of compare it strangely a lot to Returnal in terms of its roguelite nature where you have to go back with new equipment obviously Sifu didn't have the equipment, but you had key cards and things. And I thought the boss fights were a hell of a lot of fun. That last one was a bit of a joke, but I actually, when you beat that boss, you feel good. Like you feel like you've really
Is done it a because good job. Of the two elements? Because you got another fight? Is that what you're talking about?
I think the last, that last fight sort of got a bit out of hand. I think it just was a bit too much. But yeah. I think the first four boss fights were truly great. Like, I just remember everyone struggling with that second boss fight because everyone was so used to dodging and no one was weaving. And that boss fight was all about the weave. And I remember online, everyone was struggling. And then as soon as you just learn how to sort of weave and dodge the attacks, that boss fight came super easy. Like, that's the thing. I found that boss fight insane. I found all the boss fights insanely difficult the first time I tried it. But then you get to the point where you're trying to do the game in one run without dying, and it's super easy. You're like, these boss fights are easy, except maybe that last one.
See, how does a game do that?
How does
a game from so hard to so easy?
That's just that transformation, I think. I rarely have games done that for me, where, yes, you get good at a game, you get very proficient, but... You know,
there's a moment where it ticks, it clicks.
Yeah, so. And I feel like, and I'm no martial artist, but I just feel like in terms of physical skills.
I think he thinks he is, Jordan. He's a master of Kung Fu.
He said that because he wanted us to be like, oh, no.
Nah, you're pretty good, man. You're pretty good. But I think in any physical skill, whether it's a sport or, you know, anything like that, where you do have that, like, you know, when we play sport and we get better at a sport, you feel good. You have that feeling of improvement. You can see things becoming easier. The ball's coming a lot slower. You're being able to hit the ball quick. I'm speaking of cricket here, but, or you're able to, you know, shoot you know, basketball way more accurately. You just have that feeling. And I felt that. I felt like, even though this is a digital medium, I felt that physical satisfaction of I am getting better and I'm improving myself. And yeah, I'm not even going into how much I love the art style, how much I loved the level design. I thought was great, particularly the tower. Something about that really resonated with me.
Now, do you know, since it's been about a year now since it came out, there is an easy difficulty. So, but I do suggest not doing that for anyone that hasn't played it. Definitely just go in on the normal settings and just get better at the game, even if it is, because I know a lot of, no, I mean, a lot of people will have these struggles that we do, and they'll drop it to easy because it's there. And then I feel like you're missing a bit of that, the spark of
it, which is why they waited so long to put that in as well. Because it's not like it would have been hard to put it in at launch, but it definitely felt like it was intentional to be like, let's leave it for a bit. We'll put it in at some stage, but like while the game's being talked about and it's in the cycle, let's leave it as it is. And we'll chuck that in later, the easy mode.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I don't think the game does have its faults. I think the skill tree was a bit too much, where there were a lot of useful skills, I will say, but there were a lot of useless skills. And maybe, you know, yeah, like the final boss fight was a bit too much. That maybe the way the checkpointing, it wasn't the most forgiving. But, you know, can you pull a game down for not being forgiving? I don't think so. So I really liked it. The totems, yeah. That system I loved. Yeah. Like, oh, man, I can't get enough. The tower is my favorite level. I know you can just skip the whole thing with a key card, but it was
Why is towers your favorite? I've got to say the club. I thought the club is an amazing level.
The club is a classic, but something about the tower where there's that whole section where you can, like, to the left where you go into that hallucinating area, or even that room with the pendulum moving around with the ink going up the stairs. Where's that random what's the previous game?
Isn't that museum?
Yeah, that's like the tower. That's
isn't that one called the museum, or is that called the tower?
Yeah, you're getting them confused.
Oh, is there one called the tower?
Yeah, there's
the one
two.
Called the tower is number four. Museum's number three.
Sorry, I'm talking about number three. Sorry.
Number three was my favorite.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm talking about the museum. Yes. The museum is, I love
where
that.
You go to that part where it's like raining and it's pitch black and you're in this
little
arena.
Yeah, and just all about that. And even that boss fight was fun, although she was her first section was arguably harder than her second. But it's just once you pull it off, you feel good. It's a good feeling. And you're powering everything.
They've added master difficulty as well. So one
stuff
up.
Stuff that.
They've also added modifiers, advanced scoring, replay editor. So, and there's arenas coming.
I honestly think they had the biggest missed opportunity by not including a co-op. Like
co-op?
Local co-op where I know how can you, like, it can be tricky with netcode and, you know, online, but imagine like me and you and Jordan, or like, you know, just it's like that Shredder's Revenge, but 3D, and you've got all of us going through new levels, like not the same levels, but these big sandbox areas where there's heaps of guys, and you just
what would happen if one of us died?
So that's a good point. Could it be that we all individually have our own respawn lives and we come back, but we each get older, and then it's like, you know, could you imagine like Dan's 28, I'm 35, Jordan's like 60, he's on his last life, and then
Jordan, you're a slacker.
Yeah, but just that ability to be like, oh crap, if Jordan dies here, we've only got two guys left to do the rest of the game.
So we've got to go in and he's got to stay back.
Like, it's just I don't know, they could have done something there.
Have they missed the opportunity, or have they been waiting for the perfect opportunity for when Rush Hour 4 comes out and they
Chris Tucker skin
co-op partner can
play actually
Chris
coming,
Tucker,
isn't it?
You're like, Gaika, Gefilte Fish.
Oh,
man.
Jack, right. Keep the door down, Jack. Okay, yeah, Chris Tucker.
Sifu was an amazing game. We highly recommend it. Now we're moving on to number three, which is Ghostwire Tokyo. No.
Come on.
Horizon. Forbidden
West.
You know, I forgot that Horizon was called Forbidden West. I was looking at my thing before and I was like, oh, did I play Horizon Original this year? And I was like, oh no, wait, that's the new one.
Yeah. What did you guys love about Horizon Forbidden West? Let's keep it positive. What did you love?
I loved the new, do we call them creatures? New robots, new robot dinosaurs that you encountered along the way of while traveling through the West. I loved the remixed. I love how like they kept a lot of things the same, but some of the things were remixed. Like the tall necks were back for you to climb up on top of, and then, you know, you do your sync thing where you get to see the surrounding areas and that sort of thing. But I loved how it was different, and each one, like there was one that was in a cauldron, there was one that was in the water, like in the ocean, and you have to swim down and free it, and then it walks around under the water. I loved the inclusion of the water, like an extra layer of traverse.
Oh, the water, man.
So I loved all of that.
Looks so good.
I didn't like where the story is going. I don't, you know, I'll just leave it at that. We're not talking about things we dislike. We're being positive.
You can critique. I think there's you can critique.
Yeah, but we're trying to champion these games. Yeah.
We are trying to champion, but we're trying to also say why it's not a number one.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and like it's like this game could be a number one in a year though. Let's just be frank, because like it is number three. It could be number one in a year, but it's just that it's been overshadowed by the two games that come before it. But it's a lot of fun. I love seeing the more growth with Aloy, as much as she still doesn't have as much of a personality as we might like, and she still doesn't have a sword, which angers me to the end of my days. It's still a lot of fun getting to see her grow as a character, and she's come so far since we started the game, since we started the original. It's so bright and colorful. It's gorgeous. All the landscapes are so nice to look at. They're so nice to traverse. There's something there for everyone. There's so much side content that, like, I didn't even scratch the surface with some of it, and I'm fine with that. But I know Vike did so much of it, and he got even more out of it. And I don't feel like my experience was any less because I didn't do those things, which I think is a massive credit to it. So, yeah, just a fantastic, fun game, really good sci-fi story, and looks like it's headed in a really good direction.
I'll get the negatives out of the way so I can focus on the positives. I will say I think some of the characterization could use a lot of work, and the, I guess, the open world, not the setting, but just the open world design, in terms of there's just far too many activities to do and far too much grinding. But putting that all aside, I will say I played, that was probably my most played game this year. I pretty much did everything. I think I've only got one trophy left and I can't be bothered getting it, so I won't. But it is a phenomenal game. I resonate with everything Jordan said. I think the world was great. I loved the new equipment and the new weapons. Yeah, they greatly expanded on it. I think there could be, you know, it could be room for innovation in terms of the weapons, but what they had on offer was really good. The different status effects were great, and how, I guess, different enemies, you have to really know the game and know the enemies to know which weapons are good on which enemies, and the status effects that, you know, because on the harder difficulty, combining, you couldn't just spam, let's say, the spikes, those throwable explosive spikes, which everyone loves to just spam. You can't really do that. You've got to, you know, you've got to get the critical points. You've got to use status effects and combine them. You've got to lay traps down. And that's where the real fun is, where it's not just about difficulty, but it's about making you, like, the creative solutions you have to come up with to overcome those challenges. It's not just spamming weaponry. So that's, I always love when difficulty does that, you know. I know we were talking about God of War before and fighting the final Valkyrie, and how tricky that was, and how I remember in the spoiler cast I talked about how the solution for me was not to just, it was sort of to level up, but it wasn't just a spam, but it was to re-change my build, you know, to capitalize on things like realm shifts and immolation, and it's like a creative solution to this tough problem rather than just a brute force. So I think that's where Horizon, I really enjoyed playing on the harder difficulty. I will say the characters, while I may not remember their names, I think they were somewhat memorable. They were somewhat,
it's a bit of a contradiction, though.
It is a bit of a contradiction.
You know why? Because you could name every God of War character.
Of course, yeah. And so God of War had...
Why do they get an excuse, Horizon?
I guess God of War had quality over quantity. But I will say, Dan, like the... the
God of War had like 60 characters.
But do you, but if you got to remember, God of War heavily based on Norse mythology, so a lot of people already know these characters like Heimdall, Thor, Loki, Odin, Freya, you know, all of those people, Sif. But
I didn't.
That's not what makes them interesting, though.
That's not what makes them interesting. No, 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 no. I'm not saying that. But I'm just saying it's easy to remember. I didn't know
who Heimdall
them.
Was. I'd never heard of Heimdall.
Yeah, but do you remember who what the dwarfs the dwarf's Thor name and... is? Do you remember what his name is, Dan? What not dwarf? Brock and Sindri.
Durlan.
What about him?
Yeah, but like it's his one that I forgot. You know what I mean? Like I know I'm not saying God of War to me is damn near perfect, but I will say like yeah, there were entertaining characters in Horizon. I will say I know that I don't remember their names, but yeah, they were entertaining. I think obviously the character of Aloy, if you remember our review and our spoiler cast, I will say Aloy needed a lot of work. I definitely think I loved the dynamic between her and Beta, but they needed to play off that more and they needed each person to grow more to really say something. But
you watch number 3 in Horizon 3, we're getting the third one. There's going to be a third clone of her.
Third Aloy.
She's going to be evil.
Well, I loved the idea of the Far Zenith. I know not many people were a fan of the Halo 2 like ending where it's like this finish the fight where it's like Halo you know Horizon 3, but I really liked that element of Far Zenith. Like I will say Horizon is what its best quality is its lore.
Yeah,
Gaia, the AI, the story of Zero Dawn Project, the Far Zeniths, that was a great addition, the different tribes, and oh man, like such amazing lore that you can lose yourself in, to quote Eminem. And I just think it is such a phenomenal game in that aspect. I liked the world. I thought it was good, maybe a little too big, but and I thought you maybe got the Sunwing a bit too late because it's just essentially at the end of the game, but we might be sounding like it has all these critics. We have all these critiques. The positives were oh so positive, and they shine wonderfully. Like I am so happy to put this at number 3 because it. I think as the negatives they are, the positives far outweigh and outshine those negatives. And I honestly see it as a great stepping stone to Horizon 3. I know that sounds silly, like I'll wait for the sequel type thing, but I think that it's a good stepping stone. They can really focus on those things and we'll get a good product in Horizon 3. But yeah, I know I've been rambling a lot, but no. I haven't even talked about the challenges of the Stormbirds and the different islands.
Challenge yeah. of the Star, yeah.
You know, the Stormbirds, the snakes, the
sort of side content that I don't think me or Jordan did much of, but you can if you want to.
Yeah.
It's sort of side content. It's not.
A lot of stealth. The puzzles were fun. I thought the puzzles were okay. You know, the collectibles in terms of the different scanning thing.
What about the boss fights? How did you find the boss? I love that snake fight.
Yeah. Slaughter spine.
Slither Fang.
Slither Fang. And the slaughter spine were really hard.
Yeah.
They were like the T-Rex ones. They had a freaking plasma attacks that killed you in one shot.
It's fascinating to me that there's such a stark contrast between the human enemies and the robots, how the robots are so amazingly done, fluid animations, incredible stuff to fight, and the humans are very basic and not as fun.
They tried to give them armor, the heavy weapons, but
yeah, but it just becomes a bit clunky or something. It doesn't feel right.
I think that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to you leave the bow and arrow and all the weapons for the robots. Your spear and your sharpshooter arrows are for the humans. But so that's what I understand what they're trying to do.
I understand it. Yeah. It just didn't come together.
Just didn't come fully. Together. Yeah.
But it's a stunning world, beautiful music, the amazing visuals, especially some of the details in the world, like the water.
Yeah.
You fiddle around with the water and just look at it and see what it does. It's incredible. It's actually incredible.
And if
probably
anyone,
one of the best.
If anyone hasn't played it, turn off the pickup animation for flowers. Your life, you'll save 10 hours.
Yes. I actually did that with a game recently as well. What was it? I put auto pickup on.
Yeah. I just love when video games have, remember, we are a video game. We don't need
God of War.
We don't need the Red Dead 2 full animation of them, you know, picking up everything, putting it in their pouch or skinning an animal. Like, we can just do it. And I think Red Dead, obviously, it's the detail is part of the greatness
that's
of that game.
That's realistic. Yeah, trying to be realistic.
But I like that Horizon understood that and said, hey, we don't need you to bloody spend 10 seconds picking up a flower every time, especially because the amount of crafting you have to do and you have to pick up 50,000 flowers. Great game. Dan, what do you think?
Super fun game. I think Ubisoft and devs like that could learn a lot from Guerrilla, how to do a RPG, third-person RPG in most aspects. I really loved that side game as well. What was it called, Mike? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the robot chess.
Is it called
Strike?
Strike, yeah.
Strike. I really love Strike. Yeah. I always get sucked into these games.
Collecting all different pieces. It happened in Valhalla.
It happened in The Witcher. I always get sucked in.
Just quickly, one thing I forgot to mention as well. Dan, do you remember the little game you can play in Cult of the Lamb called Knucklebones?
Yes, and that one as well.
That's another one that's super
I know,
fun.
Man.
It's
I
nowhere know. Near as complex as any of the other ones, but it's just like a really fun dice game.
It's just a good way to break things up.
Yeah.
Just a good way to break things up. I think it's great. So, yeah, they're a top-tier dev. The third game's going to be amazing. They haven't made a bad game, really, Guerrilla, let's be honest. Yeah.
Call of the Mountain first, I guess, on VR.
And we've got Burning Shores coming up this year too.
Mm.
Burning Shores is the DLC for Horizon. And they've also got Horizon Online. That'll be interesting, guys. I'm not.
Monster Hunter
we
game.
Could have a different conversation about have they bitten off more they can chew.
Well, that's going to be the Monster Hunter sort of competitor. I wonder if maybe all three of us will get in the game.
If we have that Destiny-style raid, but with Horizon weapons and, like, huge bosses, that's a great formula, man. That is a great formula.
Because we did the Ghost of Tsushima. We did a bit of that raid, and that was fun.
I will still say that is one of my favorite experiences online. Something about anything co-op, Returnal co-op, Ghost co-op. I wish there was a Sifu co-op. Horizon co-op would be a lot of fun. Just something about the raid
style. So you
want to
do it again with me? Ghost of Tsushima, I need to do the raid for a trophy.
Dan, I will do it.
We've got it.
I loved that game. Yeah, 100%.
All right. I'm locking you in. Okay, game number two. Now, most people will know what one and two are, but what's the order?
Yes.
Who wants to reveal the order?
George.
All right. So coming in at number two, our number two game of the year for 2022 is Elden Ring.
Elden, which means number one. Is God Far Cry 6.
Now, by the way, this was very tough for us to pick between these two. Extremely tough. I actually went with Elden Ring, but these two outvoted me. And geez, it's close. I mean, they're both amazing. I gave both a 10 out of 10. They were the only two games I gave a 10 this year.
Mm.
And so, yeah, Elden Ring. What did you think, Jordan?
Elden Ring was a game that I was completely obsessed with when it came out. It took me like a month and a half to completely beat. Maybe around that, just because of like life and being able to do it. But I feel like that really helped me because it meant that I could really take everything in that was happening, and it meant that I was really thinking about every time I got in the car to go to work, I was thinking like, what am I going to do tonight when I get home? Am I going to try and go back to Caelid and try and get through this tower that I've been trying, or should I try and go north now instead? Just the way that they opened up the map in Elden Ring is just a feat to behold. And the fact that this map is so expansive, it's filled with so much detail, so many monsters for you to come across, so many characters for you to meet. And the fact that it looks as amazing as it does is a testament to the care and dedication that FromSoft give to their games. Like, this is no small feat what they've created here. For me, it's not perfect, but it doesn't matter because it is still just such a technical achievement and it is so amazing. I don't know whether, even if they come up with an Elden Ring 2, I don't know whether it can outdo this game or not, an Elden Ring 2 or something similar to this in the same vein, whether it can even outdo this because
it might be impossible.
We've never had anything like it. We've never had a game this open and be this detailed and this full of lore and story. Like, there is just so much going on with this game. And like, my experience is so different to the other two guys' experience in this podcast, and theirs would be so different to each other's as well. And that's because of the design of the game, which is masterful. It is amazing. You haven't played this, which I don't know if there's many people left in the world who haven't played it, because so many people got into this game. This was their entry point to From Software games. You need to give it a go, because even people who thought they would initially struggle with this have been able to master it and finish it, or at least get a really good time out of it. So it's a must play.
I think the special part of the game is just, for me, it was just, there was no hand-holding really at all. It was, you're in this world, good luck, and off you go. Now, of course, you can watch as many YouTube tutorials and stuff like that as you want, and that'll be the helping hand. But I was the one making half of these tutorials. So for me, I'm trying to learn this stuff myself. And I'm usually a player that sticks to one build for a lot of a game. If they like a build, they'll just, you know, I'll stick with it because it's working. But this game, I ended up trying a bunch of different stuff along the journey, which was very different experience for me. I tried the Wolverine claws. I tried one sword, two swords, katana. Then I had a new playthrough doing magic and dragon spells, you know, so I was just trying everything. It was just one of those moments in time where you'll remember that for the rest of your life. One of those gaming sort of months, I call it.
You've nailed it. Yeah, that's what it is. It was a moment in time where everyone was playing it, and everyone's experience was so totally different, but we were so engrossed in what was happening. And like, people would be like, oh my God, did you know you can, like, there's a secret door here that you can get through. And like, when you go, is it Necron, the Eternal City? Is that the one that's down?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, going there, man, and yeah.
Realizing how big it actually is.
That's insane. It's just some random elevator. Yeah. You think, oh, this could be a small dungeon. It's this massive city. I'm like 5 hours in. Yeah. I'm so overwhelmed at this
small dungeon.
I went straight back up. I'm like, nah. Yeah.
I'm not doing by this. The amount of things I haven't done in that game yet. And I played like 90 hours.
Yeah, you would have missed heaps, honestly. I missed heaps, yeah.
I'm baffled. I'm actually baffled at how they could make such a big world so dense. Like, the density is insane. Like you said, Dan, you go down a random elevator and you think you're just going to be there for about 20 minutes and you end up being there for 20 hours because there's just so much to do. And yeah, God of War and Elden Ring, it's literally a razor's edge. It was not an easy choice, and it is not a clear-cut winner for me. Like, Elden Ring for me, oh man, like you said, Dan, unforgettable game. Like,
You played it after the fandom. You played it.
Yeah, I played it after.
Recently.
I put in about 100 hours, and like you guys said, still haven't discovered all of it, but man, I actually think it's probably the greatest open world design I've ever seen. Like, it is so damn good. Like, you think of Limgrave, Caelid, like Laendel, the capital. You think of the mountaintop. You think of those other worlds where Melania is, and all the different enemies and all the different random bosses, the mines where you get the smithing stones and the dragons. Oh man, like,
even that, you know, that Rennie the Witch quest, like, that, yeah, I think you watched my video.
Yeah,
it was a 50 minute video for one quest.
Yeah, it was,
and there were so many elaborate parts. Do you remember it?
Yep,
and boss fights, elaborate parts, like, it's and different things you can do. It's fuck.
And that's probably what I'll say about Elden Ring, is the reason why it's so great. I honestly think that if the game would not be as great as it was if it wasn't for the community it had around it. The Vardy video for the lore, the guides, because I will say any average Elden Ring player needed a guide. I would not have known how to do Rennie the Witch quest by myself because I barely followed the story. I could barely follow the lore because it's so environmental. It's so a piece of dialogue here. There's no Uncharted Nathan Drake book journal. It's like, once you hear something, you apparently have to remember it because there is no other way you're going to know. They just say, hey, you should go here. And then 20 hours later, you have to go there. Like, hey, you meant to remember that. So
that was one of the things people were saying. They should have had a notepad in the game where you can write stuff down.
Look, I understand that. And maybe it is part of what a game is the community that fosters it. And maybe I think part of a Soulsborne game is that community guide, especially if it's something like Elden Ring where there's all these different quests. But yeah, like you said, Dan, I mean, maybe I got stuck on the katana. Something that probably bummed me out a bit is that I should have probably diversified more, but I just stuck with the one build because I think Elden Ring for me was a tough game. I'm not used to the hack and slash type games.
I feel like that's my feeling as well, Vark, where I was like, I would have liked to have tried different weapons, but it's like, it's hard enough.
Yeah.
I'm just going to use the one thing. And like, I like what I'm using. It's fun.
Yeah.
I'm just going to roll with that.
Yeah. And maybe I missed out on something greater, but oh man, like the what? Yeah. Oh man, I can't.
And just Ragnar, even that Rennie quest is so long. It's hours of content. It's a side quest.
Yeah.
It's not even a main quest.
Yeah.
It's a side quest.
What about
the Volcano Manor? Is that what it's called? Where it's like, that's a whole section you could.
Yeah. The dragon.
I love that part where you go in and you got to schmooze the girl. What's her name? Oh man.
And what about what's his name? The Ragnar? The battle with
the serpent.
Radahn, where everyone fights him.
Oh, Radahn.
Radahn.
Yeah, Radahn, General Radahn.
That's one of the best boss fights I've ever played. Yeah.
And the music, the world, the enemies were so much fun. Even the little ones.
Who's the dude who picks up like the dead dragons there and he like chops off its head and then uses it as a weapon?
Got his name. He's a second boss.
Yeah.
Is it Godfrey?
It's one of the G's. It's Godwin or Godfrey or Gideon or something like that.
So what does he do? He picks up the dragon.
Chops off the dragon's
and
head.
And uses it.
Uses it as like a hand puppet and he like reanimates it and makes it breathe fire and stuff.
Yeah.
Is it Godwin the Grafted or something like
that? Yeah, I think it's Godwin. Do you know there are 238 bosses?
Yeah, I think it's Godwin. You're right. Yeah.
In the game, there are 238 because Godrick the Grafted was so after Margit is Godrick the Grafted. There's just hours of content, and like you guys said, where you get like it occupied a part of your life. Like it really did, man. It really sucked me in, and it probably came at the perfect time where at that point I did have a lot of free time on my hands, but it was. Yeah, man, just phenomenal, freaking phenomenal game. And I'll just say, like, look, I'm not the most active on the lore and the story. I find it really hard to actually consume narrative in the way that FromSoft game does it, which is through like external lore and dialogue and things like that. But yeah, I don't know. It made me interested. It certainly made me interested in watching those Vardivida videos and reading up on things, and that's probably part of the greatness of the game. But yeah, phenomenal experience, unforgettable.
His videos are unmatched.
I don't know how he knows it all. Like, how is he studying this game so much that he knows intricate history? Like,
he's got a team that are helping him, but it doesn't matter. He's still, and he's Aussie too, so. That's always a bonus. We always like to mention that. Anyway, number one, Vikarth, as Jordan goes away for a small brief moment here, guys. We're going to transition.
That sounded very Vardy video.
We're going to transition into our number one game of 2022, Vikarth, called God of War Ragnarok, a game that delivered on all sort of metrics a game can deliver on: music, graphics, gameplay, story, characters, atmosphere, environment, environmental storytelling, voice acting. Name something. Name an aspect of game making. This
graphics,
game does it well.
Design.
It does everything
pacing,
well.
Pacing. Yeah, it does. It is. Yeah.
Puzzles are fun.
Cream of the crop. I will say that I can't get over how good this game was. How in love I am in love with Kratos. Like, he is such an amazingly written character, and I actually think part of it is the first three God of Wars. Funnily enough, I played the first three God of Wars with Jordan, and I'm surprised he still has hair on his head, because when he used to watch me, I'm surprised he didn't pull his hair out. But I will say that the Kratos was actually a character I didn't resonate with. He was someone that I wasn't a huge fan of from, like, I liked the character, but I didn't agree with him. I thought he was just way too aggressive. He didn't have any emotional depth to him, I felt like. But man, all of that, they somehow used all of that. And I love that. I've got that too, Dan. I've got that too.
I got the Thor hammer out.
The Thor hammer. And they somehow used all of that to just fuel and just improve. And I don't know, just leaps and bounds with this character, just to explore him, to develop him, especially with Atreus and Faye, especially in this story. We see here a lot more about Faye, Mimir, the Norse Aesir gods. It was so great. Heimdall. The whole game, I wanted to punch Heimdall's head in. Like, that was great. They gave me that Joffrey moment where I just wanted him dead. Odin was great. Like, completely unexpected. You know, you think Odin's going to be some brooding, big, bad boss, but he was this conniving, deceiving intellectual. Thor was great. We even got to sympathize with a few.
I couldn't help but be enthralled by every word that Odin said.
Yeah.
That guy was amazing. I forgot his name. Richard Schiff. Is that his name? He's in another famous show, but he is one hell of an actor. And this is an interpretation on Odin I haven't seen before.
Yeah. The thing that makes, when you think about Odin, if you go back and play 2018, that, like, this is what we should, this is like the Odin we got is the Odin they talked about. Yeah, but we just had different ideas in our head because we saw what Zeus was in the original and we're like, oh, well, I'm pretty sure Odin's going to be something like that. But like, you learn through 2018 that, like, Odin's never been about the muscle or the brawn. He's all brains. All we hear about in 2018 is how he deceives people. He deceives Freya. He like spies on people, imitates people just to get what he wants. He's so deceitful. And like, that's exactly who he was in this game. But we had our own ideas going in and those expectations were defied in the best possible way. And that we were given an Odin who was compelling every time he was on screen. He reminded me of when Negan made his debut on The Walking Dead. When Negan made his debut on The Walking Dead, I hung on every single word he said.
100%, George. Honestly, that's a great reference.
Like that first episode of season 9 or whatever it was, after, like, when he comes on, I don't think I've ever been more captivated by a character for that long at once. And it's just him talking. And that's what I felt like with Odin in this game. Every time he was talking, I was like, I was listening because I'm like, I want to miss anything. I want to know exactly what's going on. Because, like, when is he going to deceive me? And even though you're listening, you still don't know when he's going to deceive you. It's my relationship with this game is so, like, it's so different again to just the way of, like, Vike was saying it as well. And it's so different to the way that, like, I hear people in games media talk about it. Cause, like, I did love Kratos before 2018 came along. Like, I was a Kratos sympathizer. Like, I did feel like he had emotional depth. And I'm not saying that, like, I'm right, but, like, I was like 12 when I started playing the games and I was like, oh, this dude got tricked into killing his wife and child. All he wants is, like, revenge. Like, yeah, give it to him. But, like, seeing where he is now, and there's parts where he hasn't changed, where, like, his stubbornness is still there, and that's okay. But it's the stubbornness along with caring for someone, and, you know, developing that relationship with Atreus as the game goes on. That it's a masterpiece. It's an absolute masterpiece.
I reckon it might be the best cast a game's ever had. Actually,
yeah,
voice acting,
yeah, for sure.
It definitely, yeah, definitely.
This is his first video game, Richard Schiff, for Odin, by the way.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of people's first video game. You know, the guy from that plays Thor.
Yep.
Ryan.
Opie from Sons of Anarchy.
Is it Ryan Hurst?
He's also in Saving Private Ryan, I'm pretty sure.
Ooh. That's his first game.
Yeah.
So even Sonny Seljuk, I think God of War was his first game. So And Danielle Busetti, who plays Freya. I think it's most of these people's
first game. Christopher Judge, would it have been his first game?
Possibly, yeah. I think they've gone for TV and movie actors.
And it pays off because it is like a movie.
It kind of does pay off. Yeah. As much as I love, you know, traditional gaming voice actors, I mean, this cast is fucking...
Could you imagine if Kratos was Troy Baker?
But this was so much more than voice acting as well.
Atreus, like, Nolan North.
This game was like full on acting.
Troy Baker's in God of War Ragnarok, you know. He's the fucking bitter squirrel.
Of course he freaking is. Of course he is.
He's the one that says the ball joke when you throw it.
Troy Baker's great when he's not Troy Baker. I think me and Jordan have said this before.
Yeah.
Because when he was in Miles Morales, he was just Troy Baker.
Think about Joel. Think about how perfectly Joel is acted. It's because you can't tell that it's Troy Baker. And that's nothing against Troy Baker, but it's just like, we just want you to like flex your muscles, mate. You got to flex them. Yeah, exactly.
But, oh, man. And we're not even talking about the gameplay. We haven't even started talking about the gameplay and how much fun it is and how great the weapon is, the Drapnir Spear, great addition. Even the characters, Sprock, Sindri, how the ring, like that Norse, how it actually comes into play really smartly, and they made it into a spear, and, you know, and just the way they've played on all the lore and put their own spin on it and the mythology. And that gameplay was addictively fun. And I think Muspelheim was honestly a huge highlight for me. I had so much fun doing those challenges.
There's a big depressing thing though for me, Vike.
What's that?
And Jordan, I'll tell you what it is. It's that it's going to be 4 to 5 years till we see a sequel.
Probably longer, Dan, because I don't think they're working on a God of War sequel.
I hope I'm alive. That's all I'll say.
I don't think they're working on a God of War sequel.
I personally have an idea.
Really? Shit.
My idea is that so when what's his name?
Spoilers.
Corey Barlog. This is spoilers, obviously, for the end. When Corey Barlog handed it over to, is it Eric? What's his name? Eric
Williams?
Miller. Eric Williams. When he handed the reins over to Eric Williams, one of the things he said is at the end, Atreus has to leave. Is the project that Corey Barlog was working on, is it an Atreus game?
Well, now that you've said that, it sounds obvious, doesn't it?
I honestly thought it was Corey's working on that, whatever cancelled or that sci-fi project. But
why would he say has to leave? You know, why is that a prerequisite?
Yeah, that's true. Well, I honestly think maybe it's to allow Kratos to be himself in the next game. I don't think they want God of War.
That's a great idea, Mike. You've given me positivity.
Well, I don't think the goal was ever to make it, okay, now God of War is about Kratos and Atreus. It's always been about Kratos.
Mm. Oh, so you think the next game, he could just be barely
like
in it.
Egypt without, Atreus as a distant, there'll be quests and letters coming from him, but...
You're right. I didn't think of it in that nature.
Yeah, so I did the last quest, well, one of the last quests today, which is the campfire one, you know, the rainbow.
Oh,
campfire.
With the food?
Yeah, with the food.
Yeah.
That very much seems to me that like Kratos and Freya are like, they're not like maybe not romantically involved, but like they are,
have a kinship.
Wherever he goes next, she's going with him.
Yeah, I can see that because Freya has nothing left in Asgard, in the...
Husband, dead. Brother, dead. Son dead.
Yeah, so
she'll join him, but she might join him, but I don't see us playing as her.
No, I don't think we'll play as her either. Oh, well, we played as Atreus.
Yeah,
dude, how OP would Freya be, man? She's like a Valkyrie, a magician, like she's got everything, bro. So that would be fun though.
Anyway, we don't want to talk about this too much because we've just done a spoiler cast, so we do recommend you guys, if you haven't listened to that. It was our longest episode of all time, I think.
Yeah, we've got episodes for God of War, we've got episodes for Sifu, we've got episodes for Horizon, we've got episodes for Elden Ring. So if you want to hear more about what we think, check out those episodes because we've got heaps of content for you guys. Yeah.
All right. Any final words on God of War, guys?
Phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a absolute phenom. It's not often we get games like this. I know we got a game sort of like a game of a magnitude akin to God of War in Elden Ring this year as well. But it's not often we get two games of this caliber in a year. And it's not often that we get games like this ever. So we need to appreciate it while we're here. And yeah, just look forward to whatever Santa Monica does next.
Amazing, guys. Thanks for sticking with us. And thanks for a great 2022. We will see you in our next episode for our most anticipated games/fantasy draft. Enjoy, guys. We'll see you in the next episode. Take care and goodbye for now.
I'm not wearing hockey pads. PlayStation.